And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another victorious episode of the Assembly Call. As today, your Indiana Hoosiers get their first Big Ten victory of the season with a 68-55 win over the Nebraska Cornhuskers. They improved to 7-1 on the season, and they are now 1-0, as I mentioned, in the Big Ten. I'm your host, Jeff Marlowe, and I'm here along with Galen Clavio and Ryan Phillips in our post-game chat today. And we want to warn you, I am the emergency host today as Jared is off doing some birthday things with his wife and family. And so it's a stripped-down, unplugged version of the Assembly Call post-game show today, as we won't have some of Bob Thompson's music and such. But we're going to hit all the highlights, the banner moment, meaningful moments, the stats, and all those good things as we come to you. So, as I said, let's start the show the way we always start every show, and that's with our banner moment. And today, our banner moment came at the 14-minute mark, and that was on a Miller Cop 3 that missed, but Race Thompson followed it with a putback slam that increased the lead out to 43-30, and that's our banner moment today. Our banner moment, as always, is brought to you by our friends at Home Field Apparel, now in their fifth season of sponsoring the Assembly Call and their first as the presenting sponsor for the Back Home Network. As you think about what Christmas presents you want to get your loved ones, make sure that your online shopping includes a trip to homefieldapparel.com. For the IU fans in your life, Home Field has the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you'll find anywhere, with beloved logos like two different versions of the Bison. And for the fans of other college teams, Home Field probably has something for them too, considering their product line now extends to more than 120 different schools with unique vintage logos for all of them. And no matter what you buy, you know it will be comfortable and the colors will last through many washings. Plus, you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through Kelly. What could be better than that? Go to homefieldapparel.com and use your promo code HOME to 15% off your first order, your entire first order. That's promo code HOME for 15% off. And once again, the website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. Okay, now it's time to move the ball, find the open man, and get some opening thoughts from the rest of our team. And we're going to start off and see if Ryan has a rant today.
Yeah, look, they came back, played very well in the second half. Same stories against Syracuse, and sort of played a much better game. We're the much better team in the second half. But I think we have to address the start of this game. And it's back-to-back games where the team was not ready to play. They had 4 points through the first 9 minutes of the game. We're down 10. Mike Woodson's got to figure something out to get the team to play better, whether it's a starting lineup change or what. They came out flat. They had no idea what they were doing on offense. There was a lot of pull-up jumpers, which is the least efficient shot you can take. I mean, Xavier Johnson dribble into the, you know, about a foot inside the three-point line, shoots up a jumper, comes over in the corner, drives to the corner, and then shoots a three. That's not his game. You've got other guys shooting too quickly. There was no concerted effort to get the ball to Trace Jackson Davis. I know Nebraska was overplaying that, but hey, set some screens, move him around, get him the ball to get you started properly. They did not do that. And so my problem is, yes, they wound up turning this around and beating Nebraska. The goal is not to beat Nebraska by 13 or whatever the final score ended up being. Yeah, it was 13. The goal is to beat Purdue. And if you come out and start like this against Purdue, you're down 25 and you're not coming back from that. So they really need to get this going and to figure out how to start games better. They are clearly a second-half team. I appreciate that. There are adjustments made at halftime. They come out, they're more motivated. They've got to figure out what's going on at the starts, because this is a couple games in a row. It's not just this one in the Syracuse games. There have been a couple other games where the competition wasn't very good. So they're kind of what would have been a slow start against a good team kind of gets covered up by the competition. But this was not a good start. And they looked really bad, really out of sorts, really confused. The defense was fine, but offensively, you got to score points, because even a team like Nebraska put up 14 on them, you know, through what was it, the 13-26 mark, and was up 10 points. A good team is going to bury you in that stretch. So again, you can come back against a Nebraska, against a Syracuse team that's been struggling. You're not going to be able to do that against the top half of the Big Ten. And so they got to get this squared away fast. I know it's the beginning of the Mike Woodson era. I know he's figuring this out. I know there are some bad habits from the last staff and all of that said, but this is the team you've got. And this is the coach you've got right now. It needs to get
I think Ryan short-circuited himself there.
Am wow. I there?
Yeah.
you blew a fuse. I think you're back.
Not surprising, it happens all the time when I'm ranting like that. So that's it. They just have to get better at the start. That's it.
And we'll go to Clavio's corner. Galen, what'd you think?
Workmanlike victory in the Big Ten against a team that probably didn't get them particularly excited for a noon tip on a Saturday leading into dead week. I'm not overly concerned at this point. Yes, Ryan's correct. Two bad starts in a row. I think two very different situations. IU on the road for the first time in the last game playing a defense that they were not used to playing. Sure. And I think that certainly caused some issues for them in the Syracuse game. This one, look, we've talked about this many times individually and collectively over the course of many years. It is hard to get as fired up to play a Nebraska as it is to get fired up to play a Purdue. When you combine that with the fact that this is still a team trying to figure out where it's supposed to be on the floor half the time on offense, not sure where the ball's always supposed to go, and playing, I think, a Nebraska team that decided to just overplay everything to the hilt because they saw Syracuse do it and they realized that it worked to disrupt Indiana's offensive flow. Yes, I think there's certainly a lot of things to criticize with Indiana in this game. I think that there were certainly some individual player performances that are concerning because we're starting to see some people really set down a pattern of being very feast or famine. However, I think that when you look at what Indiana was able to do, clamping down defensively after that first 8 minutes or so and really just stopping Nebraska from doing anything they want to do on offense and eventually getting enough of a semblance of an offensive movement going their own selves that they were able to get out to a comfortable lead. They covered. They won at home. They're 1-0 in the Big Ten. They managed to put the Syracuse loss behind them. I'm not going to freak out too much about this one.
Yeah, and I kind of agree. I think both of you bring up very valid points. I was a little concerned about the start, but I really thought the return of the game came with Anthony Leal checking in early. And I thought that was an interesting substitution in case you saw, if you didn't see Mike Woodson's press availability yesterday, he mentioned something about Anthony Leal should have gotten more time in essence at Syracuse in basically a game where he was a DNP CD, did not play coach's decision. But then Tamar also, I think, came in on the next dead ball. And then those two, I really felt like really jump-started the first half for them. And even Michael Durr provided, I thought, some positive minutes in the first half. And I want to kind of come back to Ryan's. The slow starts are a little concerning. Is it simply, at this point, do you maybe juggle the lineup a little bit? As a former coach, I was kind of superstitious. And as long as we were winning, I didn't tend to juggle, but we did lose at Syracuse. So is it time to juggle and maybe get a little different five, or what do you think?
I think you probably give it one more game. And if this is a pattern, three games in a row, then yeah, you've got to change these up a little bit. I don't know who you move off. I mean, I think you need Stewart and Kopp in the starting lineup, quite frankly, because they spread the floor. Xavier Johnson's probably your best option at point guard, but he fouls too much and he's seeing way too much at the bench. And he usually starts game taking some bad shots and maybe making some tough decisions. So I don't know where you go. Race Thompson has to be in the game. Trace Jackson Davis has to be in the game. I don't know what the logical move is there, but yes, I would consider changing something up if they have a third game where this is a slow start. Maybe you mix something up, or maybe you just go to the bench quicker if things aren't going well and try and switch some things up. So I agree with you completely on Anthony Leal coming in the game. He changed the game. I mean, that's a preview of what's going to come from me down the road, but that guy changed the game. And the reason why, he was willing to make the extra pass. Nobody else was making the extra pass. It'd be one pass, somebody would shoot it. You know, they would take a semi-contested shot instead of moving the ball one more to the guy who was wide open. You could see it a couple times on the floor. If you rewatch that game, there's guys one pass away standing wide open, and guys are taking a shot instead of moving the ball along. Leal, vision, he was solid defensively. He got beat a couple times but recovered well, and then was, you know, on offense, was the guy moving the ball and getting things moving. There's a lot of standing around early in the game, a lot of standing and pounding the ball on the ground, dribbling, which we saw a lot under Archie Miller, and we would hope you don't see a lot under Mike Woodson. You hope that's a change. Again, maybe some bad habits still or what, but some of the new guys were doing that as well, just standing out in the middle of the court, pounding the ball into the ground. That's not good offense. You got to move the ball. You got to cut. You got to make the defense work, and they weren't making Nebraska work at all. The two things that saved them were Anthony Leal coming in the game and really changing the dynamic and getting things moving. And the other thing was they didn't give Nebraska second chance opportunities in the first half. Nebraska could have been up 20, but the Indiana cleaned up the boards and was able to prevent them from getting second chance opportunities. I think that was what changed the game. Leal comes in, they start to get on a little bit of a run, and they didn't allow Nebraska to get back on a run.
And Galen, one thing you mentioned, there's still a lot of new parts and things, but I saw today was a little bit concerning was, for the first time, we really looked like we weren't communicating on the defensive end. There were several times where we kind of got caught either not sure whether we should switch or just allow Nebraska with some easy drives to the basket. Was that something maybe we saw at Syracuse that you saw maybe a little more of live when you were there and I just didn't see it on TV?
No, I mean, there was a little bit of that, yes. But I think the big issue for Indiana isn't necessarily not knowing where they're supposed to be, but when they don't come out dialed in mentally and emotionally, that's where the problem comes. I think that's what happened at Syracuse, frankly, where they just looked energyless for almost the entire first half of that game. And that's really what it looked like for the first 10 minutes of this game as well. And I think that that is something that Woodson, he's still finding the right buttons to push with this team. But I also think a lot of it has to do with the point guard play. You know, Johnson has come out and not set a good example with his passing and with his overall effort levels in the first 5 to 10 minutes of the last couple of games. Finnessy is just, there's just not a whole lot that he brings to the table
He'll have a 3 minute stretch where he plays pretty well. And then it goes away immediately. Yeah. He misses one shot and everything falls apart.
He's still very tentative, not just in the shooting. I mean, his shooting's been awful. At one point, I think he was 24% for the season after he missed his first couple of shots earlier today. And then Lander, as I said on Twitter, he must be terrible in practice or something right now, because you would think that for a guy to come in and maybe give a spark, at least offensively with his court vision, that might be the option. I really do think that, you know, what Stewart and Kopp do on the floor almost entirely depends on how the point guard is playing. And especially
he's against, give him the ball,
especially against this type of defense that Nebraska, and it was a trash defense that Nebraska was throwing at them, but it was effective at confusing Indiana just enough and making them uncertain about where to go with the ball, that you have to have a clear eyed point guard in there distributing and putting people where they need to be. Johnson just isn't doing that in the early stages. He does it later, but he's got to learn how to do that from the get-go if he's going to be the starter.
And he's got to stay on the court. Let's be real. He commits a lot of silly fouls, complains about them, talks with other teams. He's got to realize he's a leader on this team, you know, and he's got to, you know, sort of moderate his action on the court. You know what? If a guy's going to get by you for two, fine. Let him have that layup and don't foul him, because you're worth more than 2 points to this team. And if you give up those 2 points, fine, you'll get back six on the other end. The other thing about Johnson that the other guys don't do right now is he goes north-south. He'll get into the teeth of the defense and distribute the ball. Whereas Finnessy, as Galen said perfectly, he's too tentative. He's too tentative to throw a pass 5 feet from him sometimes. Like, he just, you know, Trace Jackson-Davis will be in the high post and Finnessy will be there. Maybe there's not a great angle, but sometimes you risk that pass because it's Trace Jackson-Davis and he'll collect it more often than not. And you just see that tentative, that how tentative he is. You're right about Lander providing a potential spark. There is risk or reward with him, but I think the risk is worth it at this point. Yeah. If your defense is bogged down and Johnson's in foul trouble, I think the risk is worth it to maybe give him 3 minutes, see what he can do. I didn't understand keeping him out today. I know there's concerns on the defensive end with him, but quite frankly, with how well everybody else has stepped up defensively over the last couple of weeks, I think it's worth it to maybe have one weak link on the floor defensively when everybody else can recover and help. So, yeah. And Trace Jackson-Davis can clean up so many problems on the back end that maybe it's worth it. So I agree. The point guard play is a red flag right now. I really would have liked to see Lander play today because of how he's played in the last couple of games, and he's played a little bit better. And you've got to get that guy experience. He's not going to get better unless he gets experience. And you're right. It must be something in practice.
Or someone just chipped in that he might have actually had a bump ankle or and that would certainly explain.
Certainly.
Yes.
And if that's the case, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also will say there, if that's how it is, they're going to have to figure out a third person who can occasionally handle the basketball. Yeah. Because, I mean, while certainly Finnessy was good in spurts, particularly in the second half when he stepped into a shot and did that nice sidestep layup, he's just got this – he always wants to retreat back into this shell where he's overthinking what he's doing on the floor. And if Johnson can't be more consistent – in staying on the floor, I think that does present some problems for the way Indiana wants to run their offense.
And if Lander was hurt, that's legitimate, as Ryan said. But the other part that hurts that, Galen, I think, is Trey Galloway being out. Because to me, Trey Galloway is the type of kid that if you're not going to put Lander in, if he was healthy, if Galloway was healthy, he is that point guard, point forward mentality that he can get into some of those seams against the zone. I think the post game talked about this a little bit the other night. I was watching that. You know, it would have been interesting to see what Galloway could have helped him do against that Syracuse zone. Just a coach's kid, a smart kid, high basketball IQ.
Good passer and good driver, yeah.
Yes. And I also – one of the – One of the concerns I had today was just that their passing seemed forced. There were times they just try, you know, especially Miller Kopp in early in the game. There was almost like he was going to try and force a pass that just wasn't there. In part, maybe that's because they weren't focused in or whatever, but it was almost like, you know, and he kept making almost the same pass every time. So I had a little concern with that. I even posted in on Twitter as I was covering the account is like, a bounce pass would be nice to see once in a while, you know, and just think that would solve some of their issues.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I try not to get too caught up in the individual elements. You know, certainly they could do some things technically better, and I keep coming back in my mind to the idea that this is a team basically having to learn how to play offense over from scratch as a group with a bunch of new pieces in place who are getting major minutes, you know, whether that's Johnson or Parker Stewart or even some of the guys coming off the bench. It's clear that when this team is feeling itself, it doesn't have a lot about. But when somebody makes them stop the roll, so to speak, when somebody gets into their action and really plays aggressively against them, they start to back off a little bit from the things that they should be doing. And I think that's going to be an issue for this team moving forward unless they can really figure out a way to space the floor consistently, to cut more consistently, and to put themselves in a position. Because, you know, I mean, you had some good play out of the post today. Trayce Jackson-Davis with only 14 points after the two games that he's had most recently. But so much of this offense still just revolves around either him getting the ball or him providing the space for people outside to be able to shoot. When teams overplay whoever's got the ball at a particular moment in time, they don't seem to know quite how to deal with that yet. And so that's where I think this game is actually helpful, even though it was painful, because it was another chance for them to practice against not that great of an opponent who's going to overplay them.
And now it's time for today's meaningful moments you might have missed. And since I started with Ryan's rant, Galen, we'll give you a chance. What was your meaningful moment today?
Trayce Jackson-Davis going 4-for-5 from the free throw line. I know that's not one moment, but I mean, let's be honest. This has been a real concern with him in particular, and he's kind of the lodestar for the team when it comes to this. But, you know, this is consecutive games now where actually really three games in a row where he's been where you want him to be or slightly better from the free throw line. And he's going to get fouled a lot the rest of the season. And for him to put three good games together from the free throw line, I think is a real positive step.
Ryan?
For me, it was when Tamar Bates checked in the first half, and I had it marked, but I can't find it. It was pretty quick, though. And when he checked in, I know Anthony Leo, we've talked about, made the bigger impact in the first half, but Tamar Bates wound up being plus 16. I know that's a bad stat, everyone. I understand. But plus 16 in 24 minutes. That just shows that the team was scoring, you know, outscoring Nebraska when he was on the floor. And I think that him coming in and then Leo coming in really changed the momentum of the game. And he came in and really made some shots in the first half, played very well, hit three threes in the first half, didn't do much in the second half. You know, other guys sort of stepped up in the second half. But I think when he came in, that sort of started the shift for Indiana towards better play. And I think he and Leo were just, you know, much more willing to move the ball and do some different things. Now he made some mistakes. He's a freshman. That's going to happen, but only one turnover today for as much as he handled the ball in 24 minutes. That's a positive. And I thought defensively, he was doing a really good job. One of his first possessions defensively, he jumped out on a pump fake and almost jumped into the stands and got beat. But after that, I thought he settled down. He did get beat a few times, but recovered well. And that's incredibly important.
Yeah, and for me, the meaningful moment was kind of that last, and I think it goes along with yours, with Tamar Bates being in and along with Anthony Leal, that group that kind of finished the first half where they went from a 16-6 deficit to up 26-22, I believe it was the halftime score. And I know that's not one moment, but like Ryan said and Galen kind of hinted at, that game had a feel that it was getting away, and those guys that came in off the bench, you know, that group of, and Jordan Geronimo and Michael Duer kind of in that same group. That group to me, kind of when they came in the game, they helped get that turned around a little bit. So that would be my meaningful moment. Galen, anything else?
I mean, you know, this one, it's not an individual single moment, but I think Parker Stewart hitting those shots early on in the second half really was what put the game beyond a doubt, I guess you could say. Yeah, Nebraska got a little bit close later on, but he's an interesting player because he'll just kind of lie in wait for long periods of time. And you'll be like, why is Parker Stewart even on the floor? And then he just pops in, hits two or three threes, and you're like, oh, I get it. And it's just – it's weird still to watch because we just haven't seen players in Indiana uniforms do that in like four or five years. So that to me is probably the thing that stuck out the most, is that that really put Indiana in a different stratosphere than they had been up to that point.
And what impressed me about Parker, really, I mean, those shots were big. You're right. Because again, it reasserts, oh yeah, they can shoot threes. We need to spread the floor out. That opens everything in the middle. And that's when you look at Trayce Jackson-Davis having big games the last couple games. Now, number one, he's improved from last year, certainly more aggressive and more emphatic going to the hoop. He's not going to fall back as much when guys bump him. He's going through them. But the other thing that's helped is the floor is spread now because they have to respect the three-point shooter. So he's operating by himself a lot. And today, Nebraska doubled him a lot, really doubled the catch as well, not just the possession for him. And they really hunkered down to stop him. That's why 14 points, you say, oh, well, that's an off game. It wasn't really his fault, though. The question was Nebraska was going to make everybody else beat them, and they did. But I would say Parker being able to hit those shots, and what I've been really impressed with Parker, I think his defense is getting better. He's guarding the dribble better than he was early in the season. He's realizing, hey, if this guy's going to shoot a three over me and make it consistently, fine. I'm not going to let him go by me for an easy two, though. And so I think that he's definitely moving his feet a lot better than he was at the beginning. Instead of jumping out on every catch and trying to guard right up on the three-point line, he's giving him a little space and being able to go back and not get beat. And also realizing if he does get beat, there's a big guy behind him to block a shot, whether it be Thompson, Durr, or Trayce Jackson-Davis.
And I will say, kind of to piggyback off of both what you guys are saying about Trayce, he only had 5 shots in the first half, and we still found a way to have a lead. And I think that's a positive. I really do. There may be nights where Trayce is either in foul trouble or they're doubling, whatever they're doing defensively to take him away, and we still found a way. It wasn't pretty. I'm not trying to make it sound like it was beautiful executed basketball, but we found a way to still have a lead. And then it was 8-9 minutes into the second half before he really got going, and we were still kind of maintaining a lead. So to me, that's another meaningful moment that they learned that it doesn't have to have Trayce scoring 25 or 30 to get us over the hump to win. So, and next is time to go inside the numbers. And this segment is sponsored by the Power Rank, where our friend Edge uses data and analytics to make accurate football and college basketball predictions. He also writes an incredible March Madness guide every year, which we'll have a special offer for you once March rolls around. For now, if you want sports betting advice with a PhD Edge, or if you just like understanding sports at a more analytical level, you should subscribe to Ed's free newsletter. Go to thepowerrank.com/AC to subscribe. That's powerrank.com/AC. Okay, let's dissect the numbers that tell today's story of the game. And Ryan, we'll start with you.
The first one for me, and it's the same from the Syracuse game, it was rebounds. 41 to 32, Indiana won. And here's the key, Nebraska only 6 second chance points. Indiana only had 6 second chance points too. But to not give up second chance points when you're behind early in a game, a lot of times guys get lethargic, they're not chasing the rebound, and a team can build on a lead right there. They shut that down pretty quickly. And my second one is the three-point shooting. Indiana shot 36.4% and 40% in the second half, hit 8. Again, not enormous numbers. It's not like they're hitting 15, but it's better than what we've seen. And again, it changes the offense. When guys can knock down shots, it opens things up for everybody else, opens up driving lanes, opens up post-up game, opens up everything. So, and one more, free throws, 82.4%, 14 to 17, all in the second half. I'm sorry if I stole yours, Gale.
Just take the whole box score.
I'm going to take the whole box score. I'm making it easy on you. I'm taking all the work for you.
I thought we'd do like one at a time and go around. So, Galen, take it away.
Well, while I scrounge through what's left here, I would say that, you know, the biggest one is probably, what was it? IU had 13 turnovers in the first half, and they had 2 in the second half. I think that was the ratio. It was something around those. So being
4
able
in
to
the second half.
Four in the second half. Okay, so it was 11 and 4. Still, that's a significant improvement. That's basically cutting your numbers by a third. And it does beg the question, okay, why couldn't you just not turn the ball over to start the game? But, you know, I do think that when this team gets mentally dialed in, they stop turning the ball over nearly as much. And that is probably as good of an example of any that I could throw out to you. So, yeah, that's probably the big one for me, is just they were able to turn that off, and that really corresponded with them putting the game where it should.
especially early in the second half. They kind of continued that run from the end of the first half. If you're not turning the ball over, you're not changing momentum. Turnovers change momentum, and they kept that momentum by not turning the ball over.
I think the TV announcer said they had a 10-minute stretch where they didn't turn it over in the second half, and that had to be the longest stretch in a while where they hadn't turned it over.
Maybe of the season.
That may be. For me, I'm going to kind of go, and I realize probably some of our fan base won't believe this stat, but we actually won the points off turnover battle, 21-11. And we forced them into 14 turnovers as well. So while it was ugly earlier in the first half, the defense, as Galen said, got locked in, and we were able to make them into mistakes, and we were able to convert, especially in the second half, off of those. And for me, the other one I guess I'll go to here is just that race, you know, and I'm probably previewing for me a little bit what's coming up. Race with a double-double, 11 points, 11 rebounds, and no turnovers. After the other night, he really struggled against the Syracuse zone. He had zero turnovers tonight.
He was everywhere all game. Yeah. He struggled in the start like everybody else, but he was everywhere after about the first 5 minutes.
The KenPom box score just popped up, and so I can tell you that Indiana only turned the ball over on 21% of their possessions in this game, which feels like a victory given what's happened the last few games.
Keep it up, guys.
Keep it up. The other point, the other one I thought is kind of a tell, is not a worrisome, not a trend yet, but we only had 10 assists on 23 buckets. And so, you know, we didn't move the ball. So today the ball, there were times like, and probably maybe stay for a little bit later in the lingering question, but I just felt like there were times today we were standing. And I think that probably affected our ability to get assists.
I completely agree. And against Syracuse, they actually did a good job assist to made field goal ratio. Mm-hmm. So, but yes, this was definitely a game where the ball was stagnant. And that's why Leo coming in the game was such a big deal. He started moving it around the perimeter a little bit. There's a lot of dribbling, a lot of one-on-one play today. And it's not necessarily a recipe to win in the Big Ten against good defenses, but it worked out today. But they've got to get better at moving the basketball. I agree.
Yeah, and there was that segment in the first half, even though I know we're still talking about stats, the best segment for me in the first half was the around the world possession where Rob drove the baseline and they moved it two more times and Bates hit a wide open three. And the ball never hit the floor after Rob passed it. And to me, that's the kind of stuff that will lead to more assists, but they just didn't do enough of that today. So
yeah, it's going to be interesting, you know, as they continue to work with these different lineups, and you know, you don't necessarily know yet at this point, are the starting five going to be able to contribute in the way that you want them to? So you're going to have different combinations of guys playing together at different times, and being able to do that with not all of your people that you would normally want in the game at that point, I think is a good sign of things to move forward.
One number to point out too, is that of those 15 turnovers, more than half of them were from Miller Kopp and Trace Jackson Davis. I don't think you're going to see that very often this year, but Kopp and Trace Jackson Davis both had four. So that combines for 8 of 15. I think that's going to be an aberration. I don't think those two guys are going to average 8 a game together, but they were loose with the ball early on, especially in the first half. Both those guys were struggling with their passing.
Kopp really looked off. I mean, you know, in every phase of his game. And I'm curious to see how that plays out, because he's one of those guys where I think you can get frustrated with his play, and then you look at the score sheet, you're like, oh, he's got like 15.
Yes.
Or he's leading the team in scoring. Not today. Yeah,
both three-pointers he took I thought were good shots. Rimmed out, and the other one just looked a little bit off. He shot that little fade a few times where he's kind of leaning in, and he, you know, was way off to the right on it. I mean, it hit the rim, but it was way off to the right. I think that, you know, some people are saying some things about him, like, oh, he's just an up-and-down player, blah, blah, blah. He does things to help you, I think. You know, he did rebound a little bit today. He was in the mix for a few rebounds. He did have three assists. Yeah. He moves the ball a little bit. He'll dive on the floor for you. He does some positive things that don't necessarily show up in the box score as much, but I agree. He's got to hit shots to really be the most effective guy he can be. And he did that against Syracuse and was huge against Syracuse. And then to have a step back here, you wonder if it's the time change of the start, whatever. Maybe he was tired from playing so much the other night. You never know what it is, but yeah, he's got to play better than he did today for sure.
Yeah, I was surprised. I did not realize he put up a goose egg until I was just now looking at the stats. So
didn't get to the line either was another thing. He's got to be a guy who gets to the line.
Yeah, and they didn't get to the line at all in the first half. You know, they were no attempts at all in the first half. So, all right. Guys, got any other numbers you want to dive into?
I think we covered it. I think I covered most of them. You guys chipped in on the other ones.
The one other one I'll say, Nebraska held a 0.76 points per possession. And, I mean, to some degree, that was – they shot really terribly all by themselves. But you got to give IU credit. Another really stellar defensive performance as far as the opposing team's efficiency is concerned.
Yeah, I agree, Gail. That's a really good point that from a number standpoint and from a defense standpoint, when Nebraska kind of stood around and just kind of played four out, one in, we tended to cover pretty well. It was when they kind of got into a little more ball screen action that's where I was talking about earlier. I felt like we just really had some communication breakdowns. But overall, I felt like the defensive effort was pretty solid. Nebraska eventually ended up hitting five, but I think at one point during the second half, they were one for the game from beyond the arc. So, those were big. So, those are our stats for the day, and it's now time for our game balls. And we'll go around the horn here. And Galen, game ball.
Thanks. All right, Race Thompson, double-double. Did all of the little things well for the most part. Had that big dunk, as you mentioned earlier on, and really has become not just a glue guy, but has become a guy that can do things as a glue guy. You know, he can be a primary scorer if you need him to when nobody else is on the floor. He's pulling down rebounds all over the place. His defense has been pretty good. So he even, you know, ran the floor and basically had a coast-to-coast dunk at one point in the second half. So I am all on board Race Thompson for the award today.
Ryan?
I'm split between two people and they could take either of our two awards today, but I'm going to give it to Race Thompson. I'm going to go with Galen as well. I've said all year, and I'm going to keep repeating this. He's sort of our Draymond Green. He does everything. Sometimes it doesn't show up in the box score. Might be the most, you know, well-rounded player Indiana has, other than the fact that he's not shooting threes. I think his form is fine. They're just not going down. But yeah, to do what he did today, 11-11, really helped clean up the boards and keep Nebraska from extending the lead. No turnovers, two assists, a block and a steal. And as they said during the broadcast, he's actually Indiana's second leading assist guy on the year, mostly because they're doing high low with Trace Jackson Davis a lot with him. But I thought he was the best player today, all around on the floor. Especially with Trace having an off night of 14 and off day of 14-7. I thought Thompson was the best player on the floor. I thought he did the most for Indiana. And I thought that he was crucial in that middle stretch of the game where they took the lead and kind of extended it.
Yeah. And you were talking about Trace being off at 14-7. And I know I see some of the comments in there and a little bit on Twitter as we were going through the game. Wouldn't we have died for the last few years just to have somebody be consistently 14-7?
Yes.
I'm going to make it unanimous. Race was my most valuable or gets my game ball for the day. Again, like you guys said, 11 points, 11 rebounds, two assists. And for me, it's also not just the way he played today, but to bounce back after he turned it over so many times the other night at Syracuse and to have zero turnovers for this game, I thought really spoke to his mindset that I think he spent the last day or two really being like, you know what? I'm better than that. I'm not going to go out there and throw it away like I did at Syracuse. So Race Thompson gets my game ball. So that makes it – go ahead.
I was also going to say about Race, just his energy and effort at all times is very high and it's infectious. And we've talked about that before for the last 2 years, really. When he's on the floor, Indiana plays harder. And they just do. I don't know what it is. It's a kind of an ethereal thing. He just gives off these vibes, and that energy translates to everybody else. And he's exceptionally important for Indiana.
Yeah, and I will say this. I went with Race, but it was tempting to want to go with a Tamar Bates in this category because I thought Tamar played really, really well in the first half. But for me, it was the 40 minutes of what Race did, you know, for got the game ball for me. So I see some people in the chat who are like, you know, wanting Tamar, and I get that, but I was going to go with Race. And so that makes the second game ball for Race this year. He trails TJD, who has three, and then Parker and Xavier have one each as we go into it. And now it's time for the Hoosier Hustle Award, sponsored by our friends at Evansville Security Services. Based in the hometown of IU legend Calbert Chaney and hopefully future legend Christian Lander, Evansville Security Services provides off-duty police officers to businesses and individuals throughout Indiana. Remember, prevention cannot be measured, so let Evansville Security Services help you prevent a bad outcome today. Go to evansvillesecurityservices.com to learn more. That's evansvillesecurityservices.com. And so the Hoosier Hustle Award. We'll start with Ryan this time.
I'm going to give it to Anthony Leal. I know he only played, 12 minutes, but I thought him coming in the beginning was so crucial to their victory. He moved well on defense. He moved the ball on offense. He came in and the game changed. And whether that, you know, he was as important for the rest of the game, I don't know. But that momentum change, that spark he provided, I think leads to Indiana's victory. And maybe they could be awful for that whole first half and turn it on and win in the second half because it's Nebraska. But him coming in, I think it was a shift in the game. He had 3 points, 2 assists. He did have 1 turnover, but he had a steal. He found Tamar Bates on a beautiful, outlet pass up the court for a layup, hit a three. I just felt his energy change the game. And so I'm going to give it to him, even though he only played 12 minutes. I'm giving it to him because I think he really deserves it for this one. I think he changed the game when he came in.
Galen?
I'm going to go with Tamar Bates. I respect what Leal did. I think he was a key
part. That's a great call, by the way. That's my other one.
Well, thanks, Ryan. I appreciate it. I got confirmation. I feel so much better about my day now. But yes, no, I think Tamar – For the majority of the game, really gave a lot of effort. He overdid it at times, but I think that's the mark of a freshman still trying to figure out what his limits are and what he can do. But, you know, to finish, I think, second in scoring and to have made a difference both outside and inside and on defense, I was generally really happy with what he did. So I'll give him the award on this one.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with – Tamar Bates as well. I think Scoop gets it with the six, you know, the as Ryan said, plus 16. He led the team on plus minus, which again, I'm a little dubious about plus minus at times, but yeah, he led he was second in scoring with 13. He had 11 at the half to lead us at the half. And so I'm going to go with Tamar Scoop Bates and give him our Hoosier Hustle Award. So that would give him his first Hoosier Hustle Award, and he trails Xavier, who has 2, and then Race, Jordan, and Christian, and TJD all have 1. So, fellas, one lingering question that you still may have about this team after tonight.
Go ahead, Galen. You got it.
Galen, I'll go to you first.
I still don't know who to trust entirely besides TJD and Race Thompson. Like, it really does seem to be a bit of a dice roll. As far as some of these things are concerned, sometimes you get good games out of Xavier Johnson, sometimes not, sometimes cop, sometimes not. Parker Stewart's kind of been and gone at times. So yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah. I think I think that Stewart is becoming more reliable. He's good for 2 threes a game, maybe a third. You're starting to see him get more comfortable, I think, but I agree. I don't know if I fully trust him yet. I think you're starting to see a more consistent Tamar Bates slowly. Let's see when the competition ratchets up, if that stays. But yeah, I agree with you. That is a big question, is who's going to consistently be a third guy for this team? Is it going to be Johnson? Is it going to be Kopp? Is it going to be Stewart or Bates? You know, one of those guys going to step up. I don't think we can trust Rob Finnessy at this point. I think we're seeing him fall into old patterns a little bit, and that's disappointing because he apparently had a really good offseason. So I agree with you. I think that is an interesting dynamic for this team, is to find out who can consistently step up beyond TJD and Race Thompson. As far as my lingering question, it's the starts. Can they figure out a way to spark something at the beginning of the game and get on a run early, maybe establish themselves, even if they're tied after 8 minutes, that's fine. But to be down 10, down 15 in the early stages of a game, you're basically playing with fire at that point. You're putting yourself in a position where you've got to climb back out. And quite frankly, they've been able to do it the last 2 games. You're not going to be able to do it against better teams. Better teams will not let you make a 15-point comeback. They just won't. And in the Big Ten, that's going to be very difficult to do. So that's worth watching as we move forward, is how do they start the game? Can they get a few early buckets, you know, find a way to isolate TJD, maybe get Race Thompson going to the hoop, something to get easy buckets early, maybe some, you know, work inside out on kickouts, get some good looks at three early, get guys confidence early, get you rolling early, and just at least stay with the other team until you get to halftime. And I'll give Mike Woodson credit. He is making halftime adjustments, and this team is playing much better in second halves, but you got to be able to start well too. And so that's the next code to crack for this team.
And I guess I'll kind of go forward with this is the lingering question. Can we finally win in Madison, Wisconsin on Wednesday? You know, and I know the slow, and to me, that's where the slow start's really going to come into play here, that we have to get up to a much better start in Madison on Wednesday. And they're going to present some issues as well. So for me, it's always going to be about that slow start right now. The turnovers are going to get better. I truly believe the turnovers will get better, but we have to get off to better starts, especially on the road in the Big Ten.
I'm not optimistic about the game at Wisconsin right now.
I'm never optimistic about Wisconsin on the road at Wisconsin.
I mean, the one thing I'll say is that as well as Wisconsin has played overall so far this season, they're not shooting the ball that great. And so there is an opportunity there, but Indiana could unfortunately kind of surrender that advantage by turning the ball over a bunch. And Wisconsin plays such an aggressive style of defense that I'm worried that's what's going to happen. I'd love to see it not be the case. I like the fact it's a 6 o'clock Central game. That's a weird time to be playing basketball if you're Wisconsin. But, this team's going to need to show me more than they've shown so far this season if they're going to pull off a victory up there.
Yeah, I agree. And also, the one time they went on the road, they turned it over to, 25 times at Syracuse?
I've erased that from my memory.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was 25 or 26, but a lot. Let's just say way too much. So do they go on the road and throw the ball all over the gym again? Does that become a pattern? We'll find out. It's a tough place to play. It's always a tough place to play for Indiana. The officiating is not going to go their way. A guy like Xavier Johnson has to be prepared for that, and he's got to be on the floor to lead his team. You've got to be the leader if you're the point guard, you're a veteran. So how do the young guys step up? If he is not in there, does a guy like Christian Lander get to play against an aggressive defense? How does he perform if he's healthy? Obviously, somebody's saying he's got an ankle injury. How does Rob Phinisee as the backup play? How do they shoot with, there are lots of questions going into that. How do they play on the road? And we're going to find out. I mean, the Syracuse game was very disappointing on the road. Let's see what they do. Wisconsin, a very difficult place to play.
Well, and they've got like the eighth year senior with Brad Davison playing. And so, that's going to be an issue, the veteran kid there. But we're going to have to figure out a guard because they'll have some issues with some guards that we've got to be able to cover and make sure that we take those away from them. And as you guys have said, never very positive about going into the Kohl Center for a win. So but it would be lovely to get off to a 2-0 start in the Big Ten and especially get one on the road.
Yeah. Yeah. The other big thing on the game, I guess I'll say, is I think the rebounding battle is going to be a fascinating one in this game. Because yes. You've got Race, you've got Trace Jackson Davis, you've got a Wisconsin team that, they miss a lot of shots, but they've been rebounding offensively pretty well. But Indiana's done a great job so far this year of not surrendering offensive rebounds that often. So I think that might end up being one of the hidden battles of this game that helps determine what happens.
And so you're listening to the Assembly Call IU postgame show. The Indiana Hoosiers, a 68-55 victory over the Nebraska Cornhuskers today to go to 7-1 overall, 1-0 in the Big Ten. And remember to check out our friends at Home Field Apparel. Use the promo code HOME at checkout to get 15% off your first order. Okay, guys, it's time for the last call, and we'll go with Galen first.
I mean, look, anytime you can get off to a 1-0 start in conference, great. Anytime you can cover in that game after starting as badly as Indiana did, great. Overall, this is still a team trying to find itself. It's still a team trying to figure out who they are, what their identity is, who the reliable people are, and how it all fits together. So I'll take a slow start if it means a double-digit victory against a Big Ten team, and let's just move on to the next one.
Ryan?
Yeah, ultimately, it's a good way to start the Big Ten. You win by 13 at home against Nebraska. I think that nobody would have complained if you said from the beginning, hey, they're going to win by 13. There are warts to clean up. We're not sitting here saying this is a bad game. We're saying things need to be cleaned up if you're going to play the top tier of the Big Ten. I mean, it's a good win. Congratulations to Mike Woodson being 1-0 in his coaching career in the Big Ten. Some guys really stepped up and played really well in the second half to really bury Nebraska. I mean, Nebraska got within 7 at one point, but it never felt like they were in contention to the game. You clean some things up, you stretch that lead back out. But the starts are a concern because, again, if you start poorly against the good teams in the conference, you get buried and you can't come back. They've been behind early in back-to-back games and been able to come back because they're not playing great teams. So how does that work going forward? Can you get off to better starts? That's the focus going forward. Also, How do you respond to success? We've talked about that endlessly. How do you respond to the success of coming back and winning this game and being smart? Do you learn from your mistakes, or do you feel like you can fall into this pattern where you get behind, but hey, we'll just come back? You know, you've got to figure out how to learn from those mistakes and move forward. Xavier Johnson's a guy who's got to learn from his mistakes in the first half today. Figure that out, move forward. Miller Kopp, got to step up, play better. I think he will. He's a veteran. I'm not seriously concerned, but basically moving forward, Indiana has to figure out how to get off to better starts and how to play consistently throughout the game for 40 minutes, not poorly for 15 and then pretty good for 25. You've got to be able to play consistent 40 minutes.
Yeah, and for me, I'm going to go to the bench today. That's really the one good takeaway. I mean, it's just like the one good takeaway, but to me, it's the most positive takeaway is they struggled the other night at Syracuse. The bench did not play very well. And tonight they came out, or today they came out, and they won the bench points battle 26-17. And we got excellent efforts from Anthony Leal and obviously Tamar Bates. But also, even though Rob didn't play the greatest, he gave us some serviceable minutes. So I really – that's my part of the last call tonight is going to be about the way the bench bounced back today as well. So, Gail, any other final thoughts?
I just would like to see some of the bit players play more consistently. Jordan Geronimo is the one I'm looking at right now. He looked really, really promising in the first couple of games and has just not delivered – in the last few, and he's an important player. He's a guy, if he's playing well, you can get him out there for 5, 10 minutes, 15 minutes in a game. So that's probably the thing I'm the most paying attention to at this point.
And it gives rest to guys like Race Thompson and, you know, even Trace Jackson Davis. If you put him in for Trace and then slide Race down to the five. I mean, you can do that. You can mix some lineups if he's able to go more. So I agree. And also Geronimo, I will say this. And I was tweeting in our group chat today, his form on his shot looks good. He's just overshooting everything. It's just everything's long. And so that typically is a guy not trusting his shot and trying to shoot it a little harder to get it there, where he's strong enough that he doesn't have to do that. So it's just he's just got to learn to trust his shot, because that guy's got good form and he can knock down some outside shots. He can knock down some jumpers. We've seen him do it. It's just a matter of trusting it. At the free throw line, it's long every time. Every single time. It's right on line and long. And so he's just got stuff to learn and got to start trusting himself instead of trying to overdo it.
Yeah, I just think that for me, my kind of last thought was I really want to see how we play on Wednesday. To me, this is a little bit of a barometer game for the early part of the Mike Woodson tenure. Can we go up to Wisconsin and possibly get a win, but also just at least feel like we're competitive up there for once? I mean, so many times we've gone up there and haven't been competitive. I want to see what kind of mindset Coach Woodson brings to them. So, all right. And that will do it. If you want to see us do the live show and be part of the live chat, make sure that you subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/assemblycall.com. And don't forget to go to join.assemblycall.com to join our free email newsletter. Special thanks normally to Bob Thompson for the music you would normally hear on this show. And special thanks to John Ringer of ringdesign.com for designing our logo. And thank you for listening. We'll be back to talk to IU Hoops again with you on Wednesday after the Wisconsin game. And don't forget our weekly Thursday night radio show on AC Radio on Thursday night. And also, I will mention here that Kathy Amos and myself will be doing an IU women's postgame show Monday night after the Penn State game. So we will look forward to seeing you hopefully with those evenings. And until then, keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim, and go Hoosiers.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.